Welcome, college baseball fans, to episode 53 of the 11.7 podcast brought to you by College Baseball Hub. You guys go check out the Hub on Instagram and Twitter as they're giving you all the highlights from Super Regional play. James, let's dive into these Super Regionals right now. Thank you for listening to the Super Regional Edition episode of the 11.7 podcast. We are full of energy right now because we just witnessed two of the more exciting games in the Super Regional take place, with Texas Tech coming back down by one.
And the Home Run Derby Regional, Super Regional.
The Home Run Derby Super Regional. I don't think it actually is, and we'll talk about that later, but there was actually not as many runs scored in that regional as I thought there would be, even though they did score a lot. But we had Texas Tech coming back down by one, bottom eight. They put up a three spot, I believe, and then held up Oklahoma State, the heart of the order. I was really hoping Trevor Boone would get another chance at the plate, but he came up just short. And then, out of all the excitement, this one was my favorite. We had the Fighting Mike Martins come back and win in extra innings over LSU. The gold uniforms were out on display, national television. It just feels like their season. Mike Martin has the boys in the right direction. And James, I don't know about you, but is Florida State like maybe the team to beat right now?
Dude, all I'm going to say is nobody in Omaha is going to be looking forward to playing them. So far, as the podcast is being recorded, Vanderbilt has punched a ticket. Louisville punched a ticket. Texas Tech and Florida State. Dude, it's already shaping up to be one of the more star-studded fields of Omaha that we have had in the BB Corps era, for sure. You know, since the teams parodies become such a thing in college baseball now. And it's going to be an awesome tournament. I can already feel it. It's going to be absolutely unreal this year. I think it's really a turning point for college baseball this season in Omaha. But Texas Tech, like you said, an amazing series with Oklahoma State. And I don't really want to harp on it too much, but how upsetting is this? Like, clearly, like, Oklahoma State had already been swept by Texas Tech earlier this season, and they lose 2 out of 3 to them in the Super. But maybe obviously they're not better than Texas Tech. But what if they're good enough to go to Omaha, again in another Super Regional? And we've already talked about how the committee set it up this way to have the two Big 12 teams host sites matched up, and they have also done it with SEC and ACC teams. And it's kind of a bummer, but luckily the players on the field all around the country are making up for, you know, the umpires who, you know, have had so many questionable calls, whether it's behind the plate or interference calls that we're going to dive into later. But overall, dude, like, the last 72 hours, unreal, and we're going to have maybe more baseball tomorrow, at least two games tomorrow.
Yeah, I think at least two tomorrow, and possibly a third if Stanford comes back and beats Mississippi State right now. That game's kind of out of hand. I think it's 4 or 5 to 1 right now. Not very good. But anyways, James, so there's 3 points I want to make before we really start previewing the show and diving into all the fun excitement we had throughout this whole weekend. Point number one, umpires, not great. And we noticed that by very, very many review calls and strike calls and ball calls. It's almost like, I don't know, I don't want to say that it's a part-time job for these umpires, because I think I'm pretty sure for every umpire it's a part-time job, and we're not anti-umpire on this podcast at all. But there was just so many easy calls and I hate having this segment because I don't want to like ruffle any feathers, but the strike zone's unreal, literally ridiculous. The strike zones
it's
are.
When you hear the umpire, when you hear the commentators say that one caught the corner, they're talking about 6 inches off the plate.
Off the plate.
The plate's only 17 inches wide. I mean, 6 inches is a third of the plate, over a third of the plate. That's not close.
Right.
Maybe it's 33% off.
And maybe we're spoiled because we're used to only watching Major League Baseball games on television. And those umpires are 99% of the time flawless. Like, strike zones, almost, like, perfect. Safe out calls, almost always perfect. And now we actually get to see it on a college baseball level where the umpires do this part-time. And, you know, they have other obligations. They don't practice as much. They don't go through as much.
Well, here's the biggest disappointing part about it. I think this sums it up the best way. The players are amateurs, but the umpires are not. And it should be better.
Right. They should be better. So strike zone's awful. We've seen so many reviewed plays. But the reason why I made that point number one is because I wanted to get the negativity out early in the show. I didn't want to talk about this late in the show. I wanted to start heavy, get that out of the way, just because it bothered me all weekend for every single game. So that was point number one. Point number two, the NCAA is a bunch of cowards. The NCAA matched up super regionals that I think should not have ever happened. Ole Miss, Arkansas, that's tough. Those two teams should have never matched up because I think Ole Miss right now is playing some of the best baseball in the country, and they run into an Arkansas team with more experience, better talent, and a home field advantage that's like you can't.
I mean, imagine how fun it would have been. Like you mentioned, Ole Miss definitely was like the biggest surprise of all the hosting teams. Match them up with UCLA. Yeah. Them all, like that would have been beautiful.
They would have looked. I think they would have looked up on UCLA like it was nobody's business. Another one is, you already touched on it, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. Absolutely ridiculous to make those the 8 and 9 national seeds because, in all honesty, one of them should have been up to 6 and maybe the other one at 7. 6 and 7, somewhere in there, where they don't match up in a super regional. But the NCAA wanted, like, actually literally admitted that they wanted to keep super regional within conference because they felt like the atmosphere would have been better and people would travel to those and blah, 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 blah. And so we see what happens whenever you match a SEC team up with a Pac-12 team, or you see an ACC versus SEC. Like, the conferences are not even. And I think if you send Ole Miss to UCLA instead of, like, Oregon State should have been there, or also known as Michigan right now, UCLA is struggling with them. UCLA is struggling with the third best Big Ten team. I think Ole Miss would have just rolled over them. I also think Texas Tech and Oklahoma State would roll teams like, North Carolina or East Carolina. Like those type.
We should at least have the, be able to see it.
I think those teams beat Louisville. And so I'm done with the whole interconference thing. That needs to go by next year. If it happens again next year, I'm gonna have some serious problems, which my voice doesn't mean anything, so they're not scared of us. But
I don't know. We are low-key an outlet of our fans, so perhaps our voices will start to mean more. But another takeaway for me, Vanderbilt, after going down 0-1, storms back on the right shoulder of Kumar Rocker, literally like shades of Roger Clemens, just punching out ridiculous amount of batters, 19 guys. Duke just completely overmatched offensively, completely overmatched.
And a little brag on myself. I'm good for like one humble brag an episode. I'm going to use it right now. I went on live ESPN radio in the city of Houston, the fourth largest city in the country, earlier that day. Literally live ESPN radio, 97.5. Got hooked up with the talk show host over there, Cody Stutz. And he asked me if there's three players that you could watch or tell the fans who maybe don't know anything about college baseball who to watch today, who are they and why? And I immediately said, Kumar Rocker. And I said, he's the best freshman in the nation, offensively or defensively. He's got some of the best stuff we've ever seen in college baseball at that age. And, like, the electricity out of his arm is going to put Duke in a hole, and they're in trouble. And I didn't say no-hitter. I wasn't even thinking no-hitter. That's how much he exceeded expectations. But Kumar Rocker is the key to that Vanderbilt team because we've seen Vanderbilt's pitching staff kind of got exposed by Duke a little bit. And I know that's a segment you wanted to bring up, James, so I'm not going to steal your thunder, but
yeah.
Kumar Rocker is the key for Vanderbilt to win the national championship. You can throw out J.J. Bleda. You can throw out Austin Martin. It doesn't matter. Like, if Kumar Rocker goes out there and wins like he did against Duke, that's really, really tough to find a way to beat that team.
And I will add the hard-hitting analysis behind you on, you know, why it's Kumar Rocker over J.J. Bleda and those guys. One, those guys might get 4 or 5 at-bats a game. It's really hitters are very volatile in their performance. But two, if you have a guy go out and shove like Kumar Rocker did, when you give up 0 runs, you can't lose. You can't lose, guys. Like, that's just the bottom line. Like, you can lose a game 12-11.
J.J. Bleda could have 9 RBIs and Austin Martin could have 11. And you know what? They could lose 21-20.
That's right.
You don't give up any runs. Can't lose.
Can't lose. You can play for 5 days, but you can't lose.
And Kumar Rocker showed he's willing to go 135, 140 pitches.
Dude, what do you think about that?
I love it. Why not? You think he's going to get hurt? He literally looks like Bo Jackson on the mound.
Dude, what I did love in that game was it was the seventh inning, and the head coach for Duke, Chris Pollard, had that timeout, that conference with his hitter for like at least a minute and a half with two outs in the seventh to try to stall. And I was that backfired.
I know what he's doing though, because the way that Kumar Rocker would literally get the ball and 5 seconds later the pitch would be delivered again. He has to be the fastest working pitcher we've ever seen. Like, he's literally the ball, and he's already on the mound and taking a step back for, like, out of the windup. It was incredible how fast he worked.
When you're in a rhythm like that, you just want to keep pitching. It's just like this a positive feedback loop, like, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball.
Yeah,
like,
but he's done that all year. I saw a tweet where he averages 14 seconds between pitches, and, like, that would be the fastest in Major League Baseball right now.
Wow. Well, he looks like the real deal. Like, if we were talking before the podcast, and if you saw him pitching in a major league game, like, you wouldn't bat an eye and be like, you know, why is this
guy doesn't belong here? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
If you threw him in a major league game right now, put a Cubs jersey on him, you know, the Cubs sign Kumar Rocker instead of Craig Kimbrell, like, nobody would say like, oh, this guy doesn't belong here. This guy sucks. Or like, even like, oh, I don't know about him. Like, yeah, he might get hit around, but not one person in the stands would be like, I don't feel good with him on the mound.
100%.
Not one person would say, I don't feel good with Kumar Rocker on the mound. So, but I guess everything to tie it in together with Kumar Rocker, if you're not familiar, he was, I think, the number one high school prospect in the country last year. He told every major league scout, I'm going to college. I'm going to Vanderbilt. I promised my parents an education. I promised them that I would develop
a
player.
Yeah, honestly, it's going to be better for his development to go to Vanderbilt than to pitch in Double A.
Right.
They're going to get him better.
And we talked about it on the last episode. Kumar Rocker, if he would have thrown a no hitter at a, you know, even a Double A or Triple A game, let alone a Single A or rookie ball game, nobody would have cared. Right. There wouldn't have been like there would have been maybe 500 fans there sitting in the game watching, and it wouldn't have been on ESPN. Nobody would have cared. It'd be like on the bottom screen, maybe like Kumar Rocker throws no hitter, maybe. Maybe on the bottom screen at ESPN. But yeah, he got to pitch in a meaningful game, super regional, first no-hitter in super regional history. And everybody, like, he basically broke Twitter yesterday. And, like, those moments don't happen if you're playing pro ball. Like, I know he's, you know, $3 million, not in the hole, but, like, he would be probably signed for $3 or $4 million last year. But you know what? In two more years, if he continues with this, he'll be a $7 million arm. He'll be the next Steven Strasburg out of college.
Well, and yeah, I agree.
He's basically investing in himself. He's investing in player development. He's investing with the mental side of the game. And, you know, if he can turn that $3 million signing bonus he would have had last year into 7 or 8, like, that goes a long ways, because you don't get paid until you make it to the major leagues. Like, when you're sitting in minor league ball, you know, that extra $3 or $4 million sounds real good. So
yeah, 100%. And just on the flip side, a majority of those punch-outs were on breaking balls and off-speed pitches in the dirt. No, like, at some point when you're just being that much, it's obvious that you're being out-talented. Like, you don't have the hitters that are the quality of the pitcher that's on the mound. Like, at some point, you have to make a risky adjustment, which is we don't know if it's going to be a fastball or a curveball in the dirt. They look similar for a while. We're going to make the adjustment that we're going to make him beat us with fastballs in the strike zone. If it looks like a fastball at the knees, we're going to take it with two strikes. Because look how many guys have punched out on curveballs. He's not going to stop throwing curveballs and start throwing fastballs at the knees. So you almost have to guess.
Exactly.
Guess and assume. I'm going to assume that it's a curveball if it looks down and I'm not going to swing. I might be wrong. I might punch out fastball-looking fastball on a fastball down, but we don't have the hitters to just go out there and beat him, so we got to try something gimmicky. And they were in the game. You know, as much as they were being, like, as much as it was Randy Johnson and backyard baseball, like, they were still in the game. It was like,
it was 3-0. It was maybe 2-0 at that point.
It was 1-0 in the seventh. They're in the game. So
right.
Duke just outmatched in all phases. Yeah.
And James, I'm going to ask you a very subjective question here that I think the fans are really going to love. What percentage of Major League Baseball starters throw a no-hitter against Duke yesterday?
Oh, man. I mean, what percentage?
I think less than 1%, less than 2%.
I'd put Major League Baseball starters. God, it's got to be around 1%.
Like, and I'm not saying that Kumar Rocker is as good as Major League starters, because we just don't know. It's very subjective. But what I'm saying is, if you put all, let's see, 150 starters in the major leagues,
1% would be 9 guys. I'd put around 1%.
I would, yeah, maybe 9 guys would throw it. Like, that's how outmatched Duke was yesterday.
Yeah.
That I would compare it to 9 major league pitchers would be able to accomplish that feat yesterday. Because think about it. I know the major league pitchers probably on the mental side and scouting report side and stuff side equal or even better than Kumar Rocker. And obviously there's a lot of I'm not going to go dive into the details because nobody really cares about it. But what I'm saying is, if you put, I don't know, I'm thinking of like a major league, like Colin McHugh. If you put Colin McHugh, one of my favorite Astros pitchers, on the mound against Duke, I think they get a hit, or at least like one or two.
Oh, yeah.
You leave a fastball up, or like one of his 12-6 curveballs like hangs. Like, it's a metal bat. Like, you could get a hit. And especially if you don't put a major league defense out there for him. Like, if you put Colin McHugh out there with a, you know, college defense, I think he gives up multiple hits to Duke.
You make a good point. And this kind of leads me.
That's how special. Yeah. So to wrap it up on my end, that's how special what Kumar Rocker did yesterday was. Plus, on top of everything, it was an elimination game where they had to win. Literally had to win. Keep that season alive.
Yeah, it was ridiculously huge, and the fact that he was able to eat so many innings saved other big-time bullpen arms in case the game got tight today, which it did not. But it really kind of begged – watching Kumar Rocker, really, I feel like Tim Corbin has a dilemma that he needs to address, and he can't just let go. And this came to me by one of our Vanderbilt followers. Like, why didn't Vanderbilt show up Friday night? And I don't think it's so much they didn't show up. It's just you talk about subjectivity. I've watched Drake Fellows at least 4 or 5 starts this year. I'm not convinced he's the best fit. In fact, I don't think he is the best fit for Friday night. I think he's been around a long time, and yeah, like he throws 3 or 4 pitches and he can locate them for strikes. But I've seen the ineffectiveness more often than you would think from the Friday night guy on Vanderbilt.
I think he's their third best starting pitcher.
I agree. I totally agree. And there might be a guy or two in the bullpen that have better pure stuff.
Yeah. And Fellows is a good pitcher, but I see what you're saying because, I mean, people want to look at the stats and they're going to argue and say, well, Fellows was 12-0 this year before that start against Duke.
This is not 1988. We're not arguing.
Wins like those, and losses literally mean less to me than probably any other major league stat. I mean, baseball stat. Because you could give up 16 runs and still get a win, right? Or you could give up 1 run and get a loss. You could give up 1 unearned run and get a loss.
The studies have been – I'm not going to dive into details, but the studies have been done on what stats correlate most – to a player being good, and that's not one of them. Sorry.
Right. If your argument to us is that Fellows is 12-0 this year, I guess 12-1 now, like we're just not going to even – we're not going to acknowledge you. And whatever. But I think you're right. I think if Vanderbilt wants to do this right, Corbin at least has an easy way out of telling Fellows, like, hey, you're not starting game 1 of the College World Series because you got shelled and Kumar Rocker threw a no-hitter. So we're going to throw him game 1 of the College World Series. And that way Colby Fellows like doesn't – and he can't like argue with him. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Drake.
Drake Fellows, whatever. What did I say? Colby Fellows?
Colby. Our minds are all over the place right now.
I think there's a kid at Mercer named Colby Fellows. I don't know. I might have just given him a shout-out on accident. I apologize. Yeah. But – anyways, that wasn't the only thing that happened this weekend. What do you want to talk about next?
What I wanted to finish about it was he's going to have that decision to make when they open up. Like when you're playing the opening game of the College World Series, we know if you get in the loser's bracket how tough it is. You don't want to do it. So I would rather go with Rocker. I think, you know, he might be a different – he's not a freshman anymore. Like, his confidence is going to be through the roof. He's going to feel like he – he's not going to be nervous now. There's no way he'll be nervous to pitch the opening game.
The way he finished that game, it didn't even look like it was – like, the maturity that he had just standing there on the mound while his teammates celebrated just gave everybody, like, a stone-cold look. Like, he doesn't bother him. There's no pressure moments for him. Yeah. Like, just does the same thing he's been doing his whole life. And, man, he's going to be tough to beat. Right. It would have been really nice to see Vanderbilt lose game two, though, or lose today. I don't know. I was really attached to that Duke team for some reason. I thought that they were really talented. Obviously, I have nothing against Vanderbilt, but it's I guess it comes to the point where you see a team over and over in the College World Series, and you're like, let's see somebody else. Let's see somebody else. And we almost got that with Oklahoma State, and we almost got that with Duke. Maybe Michigan, if that game, if they come back and win that game that we're recording right now, it's still going on. But besides that, I mean, we're going to see the same teams we've seen for a long time, which I guess I'm okay with. It just shows that, you know, it's a little top heavy.
But I think the way it's going, it's gonna be fun either way. But I agree, it would have been nice to see those guys play for Duke to win that game. But we were gonna have a great matchup tomorrow because Doug Nikhase, the booger man himself, shoved enough today against Arkansas to get his team
keyword
victory.
Enough.
Yeah, shoved enough. He had some big time strikeouts. When you get to big time strikeouts, those are statement outs. You got to get those outs for your team. And he exercised his demons of yesterday.
I'm actually really glad that Ole Miss won today and Doug Nikhase had a good game, because I was actually super embarrassed for the kid.
Oh, yeah.
For everybody that doesn't know what's going on, there was a video that went viral on Twitter of him eating a booger while taking a chart in the dugout yesterday during the game. And it was as clear as daylight. He picked the nose, checked it out, gave it a little look, and then just shoved it right in his mouth, kept doing the chart. And I feel bad for him because he's an 18 or 19-year-old kid. He, you know, didn't know that the cameras were on him. Just doing a chart that I know he hates doing. And he got caught. He got busted. And so he got welcomed to the mound today by the Arkansas fans with, booger eater, booger eater. And it was just great. But I was like, please just go out there and, don't give up any runs in the first inning. And sure enough, he gave up two runs in the first. And I'm like, God dang, this is bad. But
it's not going to be good.
But he came back. I think he ended up giving up five runs. But, you know, he had, a 10-run lead or an 8-run lead at the time. So he pitched well enough for a freshman in that atmosphere, shut down the bats, got some huge punch-outs, got some huge – I think he had a huge double play ball somewhere in, the third or fourth inning.
Yep.
It was fun to watch. I think Ole Miss gets stomped tomorrow because I just don't trust the back half of that pitching staff.
Yeah.
And Arkansas, we have never seen Arkansas lose these type of games. Not mentioning anything about last year's national championship game. That's a different story. But, you know, these super regional games, these regional games where they, you know, they don't know if they're going to win or not. Their fans are nervous. It's like they're going to come out. They have Dave Van Horn. He's going to be a beast. He's going to get the boys ready. But I don't know. It was cool. It was cool seeing Ole Miss win today. Just because I'm always rooting for game threes of super regionals. I think it's one of the best events in sports because you get the little thing on the ticker that says winner advances to College World Series. And
it's like a game seven, man.
Yeah, you get to see some tears from the losing team. You get to see Mike Martin dance in the dugout. You know, you get to see some interesting things after the game's over.
So I want to go ahead and touch on a game that we are going to see tomorrow is North Carolina and Auburn. And first of all, I want to give a shout out to the freshman star power on the Tar Heels. Austin Love going 8 innings strong today in a must-win game. Aaron Sabato hitting in the two-hole. Look, here's my professional comp to him, at least in the way his body moves. It's Mike Trout. I want you to take a look at it. In his stance tomorrow, it's Mike Trout-esque and his swing. And he's been raking the way Mike Trout would, by the way. Aaron Sabato, freshman. Also, shortstop, freshman. Three and those freshman hitters hit 2 and 3. 2 and 3 in the lineup. And they have their freshman arm today going 8 innings with the game on the line. There is no excuse for teams around the country saying, oh, we're young this year. Oh, really? Well, why is North Carolina one game away from College World Series counting on freshmen? So shout out to Mike Fox. You know, shout out to that staff to taking 18-year-old kids and in 8 months, you know, getting them ready to handle these type of situations. You know, you really have to develop trust and love with your players, man. There's no excuse. Oh, we're young. Oh, well, North Carolina's young. They look pretty good. They look pretty good to me. But so I also want to talk about
Wait, before we move on. Was that your little pump-up talk to North Carolina because you really don't want them to lose tomorrow since that's your national championship pick?
I'm not even worried.
You're a little worried.
They
you're
can like play seven times in a row. They can play seven games in a row. They'd win all. They'd win the next seven. It's really Auburn? No problem. Auburn's pretty good, but they're not. They're overmatched, bro. They're overmatched.
No, dude, that was a cute little pump up talk you had for the Tar Heels. I know you're nervous right now because my little Tar Heels are sitting real pretty already there in Omaha. First team to punch a ticket.
Dude, you don't even like Louisville as much as you like Texas Tech. Don't even.
I hope they match up in the championship game because then I would look like an ultimate genius. But yeah,
interference call. We got to talk about this. The umpires ruining this interference calls.
There was two or three in that game that were just ridiculous.
What the one that was most ridiculous to me because we don't have time for everything.
What is the rule?
Okay, so the rule is they addressed this rule to us specifically as I was a second baseman at my time at Longwood and when they first made this rule, which is the umpire. Umpire. That's how much the umpire.
Michigan just took a 3-2 lead.
Let's go. Sorry, Ryan, but we like underdogs. We can't help it. We root for all of our buddies that we've made on the show. Isn't that right, Ben?
That's right.
So basically, lost my train of thought. So the rule is that the runner has to slide directly into the bag, you know, whether it's feet first or head first. Most of the time it's feet first if there's a play at the bag. So you have to slide directly into the bag. You can't slide in or out and then grab it with your hand like a hook slide. You can't do that. You have to slide feet first into the bag. And so there's a double play at second base, and the second baseman for North Carolina is literally standing between first base and second base when I say in front of the bag. Like, he's in a straight line between first and second base. Like, he's going to get destroyed. And the runner for Auburn ends up taking him out on the play, and the throw goes 20 feet over first baseman's head, and North Carolina's looking around for interference because the kid's on the ground. Well, hold on a second. The rule is you got to slide into the back. So let's look at the replay. The runner is directly – or the fielder is directly in front of the runner's path to the base. And honestly, as I'm watching this video, what I see is the runner who's sliding into the bag – trying to avoid of taking out his like fellow competitor, you know, because the kid's directly in front of the bag. So he kind of slides out of the way and clips him, but they call him out for not sliding into the bag. And let me just say, if he slid directly into the bag, the kid would have been hurt more. Like, there's nowhere else for the runner to go. So basically what the umpires are saying is, well, you needed to take him out. Like, it was a rule. It was basically what they're saying. You needed to take him out. So the kid tries to slide around him a little bit. There's no way he's not going to hit him. Like, it was literally like just meat hanging in front of a shark. Like, it was he was going to get destroyed, Ben. Absolutely right. Hammered. And there's no way he wasn't going to get hit. I felt like the Auburn player was trying to like not be in mean spirit. And they still punish him. It was just brutal, totally brutal. The umpires mishandled it. Luckily for North Carolina, their star shortstop doesn't get a torn freaking ACL because he was setting himself up to be destroyed.
So this play, and this is a hot take on my end, or just not a hot take, but a comparison. But this type of play reminds me a lot of, and I hope you watch the NBA because it reminds me of an NBA play. When a guy is shooting a three-pointer and kicks his legs out to try to draw contact and then lands on the opponent's feet and falls to the ground and says, like, hey, I was supposed to land right there. Like, well, no, you kicked your feet out 3 feet and, like, you started the contact. And
dude, that's a great comparison.
Well, and so, like, that's – whenever I saw that play, that's immediately what I thought of was, like, the shortstop – or it was the second baseman. Second baseman was like looking for contact because the Auburn guy slid away from the base, which is against the rule. But, you know,
in order to save the competitor,
like, he would have killed him. Like, he would have been like a Chase Utley play, but Chase Utley and whoever it was.
Yeah,
in
the except World Series. Chase Utley did it on purpose, right?
Yeah.
Like, the anti of what we're talking about.
It was like, that's what the umpires were looking for. And another play that this reminds me of, if you don't watch the NBA, I have one for baseball that will relate well to you. Whenever, like, someone is stealing second base and the catcher receives the ball, and then purposely tries to make contact with the batter and like launch the ball in right field and be like, hey, he was in front of the plate. Like, I was trying to throw him out. And the umpire most times will be like, yep, that's batter interference. Runner's out, batter's out. Like, it's guys going out of their way to try to make contact with the player so that they can get that automatic out. And smart on their end, but like, kind of like, it's kind of Bush League. It's kind of like, dude, just play the game. Like, you need to, whatever. I don't know.
No, I just the title to get.
I don't play the game anymore, so I guess I can't talk on it. Because
we're old. I always
get mad at the old guys on the broadcast. Like, back when I played, we used to do this and this. And I don't want to be that guy. But I do want to say that there was some contact being initiated by the defensive team to get that out.
And just to tie it all together, you know, I'm fired up, so my thoughts aren't very clear. But the rules are designed so a second baseman who is reasonably away from the bag. Like, look, if you're playing second base and you catch the ball in second base and then you have to throw it to first, like, you're going to be somewhere around second. And the guy's sliding in somewhere around second. So it's pretty easy to get taken out. So they put this rule in. So like, all right, you know, if we make the kid slide into the bag, the second baseman can still be around the bag and not get taken out. Well, the idiot is right in front of second base. So he's going to get taken out no matter what. So there's no way, like, you have to actually look and see where he is and not just look at the runner. Like, he's dead regardless. He's literally dead regardless. So that just kind of ties it all together. But now I'd like to talk about some questionable base running plays from LSU, or else I think they could be playing tomorrow in a winner-take-all. You've got Giovanni DiGiacomo with bases loaded, one out, gets picked off from the catcher on a back pick. You know, So I would love to sit here and blame the kid, but we're going to go high-level analysis right here, Ben. There's this great book. It's called Extreme Ownership, written by Navy SEALs. And the principle of the book is there are no bad teams, only bad leaders. If you're a leader and someone in one of your subordinates who counts on you screws up, it's your fault. It's your fault. So if you've got a freshman who gets picked off in the biggest game of the year for getting too big of a lead, you screwed up for him not understanding that. You've had 8 months to prepare him since individuals to today for that type of situation. That's on the coaching staff. I know he's 18 or 19 years old, you know, and he probably shouldn't have been that far off the base, but you get paid millions of dollars when you're the coach of LSU. Maybe if we spent less time complaining about losing draft picks, we wouldn't have our kids getting picked off. I don't know, Ben. What do you think?
No, I like that. I like that take. Let's save the players. This is a podcast built by players for players, and let's go after the coaches. Let's do it. You know, I agree with your point because it is their responsibility at the end of the day. But the sad
like if I'm 60 years old, who am I to blame a 19-year-old kid?
Yeah, but that's what most coaches do. It's like, what were you doing out there? But I do think, on the other hand, the player has to accept some responsibility.
Oh, if I'm the player, I definitely am. That's the thing. Everyone's accepting responsibility. That's what good teams do.
Okay. But
that was one mistake. And then also Zach Watson gets thrown out on a trailing play. There's a runner at third after a ball hit. He gets thrown out at second. And I kind of want to just touch on why I think that this is kind of prevalent. And it's because so these coaches at big-time schools, obviously the level they play, competition is intense. It's very cutthroat. And because that's the case, it's hard to really draw lines on strategy. And so what these high-level coaches and programs do is if we're going to lose, we're going to lose being intense and aggressive, right? It's kind of like if you took these two competitive teams and play a game of chicken, like these coaches would go down playing games of chicken, speeding up with their cars, not slowing down. And it's just kind of like the same mentality on like over on baseball field. Like, you know, I don't know what to do, but I feel it makes myself if we're going to be aggressive. It just makes me feel good. Like, if, you know, I might lose, but at least we went down not being scared. And I think that's what leads into people running into extra outs. And it costs you games, man. Like, you want extra outs at the end of the game. Like, you cannot afford to make base running mistakes. And you know, part of the reason is like if you're making a base running mistake, you were already on base. It's hard enough to get on base already, man. Like, we can't be just giving that away. Yeah. So those are just two examples of little things that, you know, are going to make LSU be watching the College World Series. So.
Right. And to play a little bit of devil's advocate, the Zach Watson play, the first base coach was not sending him. He was like, you could tell he wanted him to stay put, like maybe get a bigger second, like round the bag a little bit bigger, but he was not waving them. There was no windmill motion going to second.
Two.
It was more like, come on, like, slow down. But that was just Zach Watson being an experienced player, thinking that he had a chance to catch the defense sleeping. And I want to give more props to Florida State for sniffing that out and hitting the cutoff man and knowing exactly where to throw the ball.
Amen.
And Zach Watson, I think, can live with that decision because he's done a lot for that program. But it is going to haunt him a little bit because, you know, that's a big momentum shift. You know, first and third, one out is a lot better than runner on second with two outs, or runner on third with two outs.
Yeah.
Like, even though the double play is an possibility, I know he was trying to avoid that. But, you know, at that point, you have home field advantage. You are playing in front of 10,000 or 12,000 screaming LSU fans. Like, just pass the at-bat down to the next guy. Everybody in that lineup's talented. You don't have to be a hero.
No,
that's why they're not playing tomorrow.
No, 100%. And just to finish the thought on the base running stuff, maybe if I'm not making too much sense, this will make sense. The thrown ball moves a lot faster than your feet, man. Like if you think you're only 6 inches too far off of third base, the catcher throws at 89 miles an hour down there, you're out, man. Like, that happens really fast at this level. Like,
you run it like, what is it? Like, you run it like 18 miles an hour.
That's on full speed. That's on full speed.
The ball is coming 89 miles an hour. Yeah, that's a big difference.
When you're shuffling back to third base, you're moving at like 4 miles an hour, man. You are out. Like, that ball just travels.
For every foot that you go, the ball goes five.
Yeah. It's just not a good race. Not a good race. You need a big head start. But overall, I have been so thrilled with this weekend, flipping back and forth on games. And I was talking with my pops about this. He's like, what is the biggest thing that, you know, you would do to help college baseball get better? And I really came down to one thing. It just hit me. It's like, they got to market this better. Like, think about this, Ben. The iPhone is a great product. But what if the iPhone commercials were like, this is the Apple iPhone. The Apple iPhone allows you to make calls, text messages, surf the internet. The Apple iPhone will cost you $1,000 a year. And then the commercial ended. Terrible marketing, right? I think college baseball has terrible marketing. We need to be making like commercials and just like marketing in general. Because now it's like
not use the same College World Series song the week before the College World Series, right, on a little commercial where like three teams dogpile.
100%. Like
this city, this crowd, come, and then just dog piles, and that's it.
Right. Like, there's so many. Like, we can market on the internet. That's how you reach young people, anyways. People surf the internet. You know, they don't watch reruns of Friends. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Another thing.
We're staying on marketing, because I do this full time.
Yes, you do.
I think what we do for college baseball is 10 times better marketing than what they do. Because they don't interact with players. You never see any kind
that
of.
That was player. My second thing. It's like, it's on us.
Yeah, like the players never get any exposure. It should not be as easy as it is to get a player to interview on this podcast, because these guys are celebrities to us and college baseball fans. Like, you go out and get Alek Manoah. You just Instagram DM him. Hey, man, like, we really love you. We think you're a great pitcher. Come on our podcast. We heard you're a good personality. And he replies with, yeah, let's do it right now. It's like, it shouldn't be this easy. Yeah,
they should have interviews to do already.
Go try to get Jake Fromm or Tua Tagovailoa to interview on your podcast. It ain't happening. Like, these guys are the most marketed guys under the age of 21 out there.
And baseball is not that different as far, like, it shouldn't be that much of a disparity between football stars and baseball stars at the college level. It's just like, look at the crowds at these super regional matchups. Like, Mississippi State was doing some chant earlier that, like, it was intimidating as hell, man. It sounded like one of those Viking chants from Iceland.
The tiger bait chant from LSU fans is my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just relief pitcher comes in, tiger bait. We're going to let you know that you're tiger bait. Like, none of that's – I mean, there is stuff that happens in college football and basketball like that. But, like, Kumar Rocker should be the next Zion Williamson. Like, very comparable athletes, very comparable sizes, number one prospect in each, you know, each individual league.
Right.
But, like, nobody knew – like, I saw a tweet today that made me so mad. It was, like, some random Vanderbilt guy broke Twitter today. Wow, cool. And it's like, dude, like,
delete your account. Delete your account.
Screw you, man. Like, And so you're right. You're 100%.
Well, you know where this stems from. It starts at the top. It starts with Major League Baseball marketing. Because if Major League Baseball marketing was great, and then
Baseball marketing is the worst, by the way.
That's
a different topic.
Right. But if it was great, then like people were introduced to that product, and then the college product comes around this time of year, like, oh, like version 1A is fun. Maybe version 1B is also fun. But 1A already sucks in my mind. Like, the marketing's terrible. They had that Let the Kids Play ad earlier this year, which is a step in the right direction. But you got to erase delete the previous 20 years of terrible marketing. So I think that's kind of what contributes to it, too, is, like, if people don't like pro baseball, why would they – if the average fan doesn't really like pro baseball.
I think you're wrong in this scenario because if you put it in the football perspective, I think there's more people in the world that actually like college football than NFL. Maybe not in the world, but in the United States, because
it's very market. It's individually market driven because the SEC, really shows out for baseball. And then you've got like the Atlanta Braves are the only team around there.
Right.
Between those states.
But you're right. Major League Baseball would help college baseball out a lot if they marketed better. But you got to think Major League Baseball is competing with college baseball for draft picks. You know, they're competing very heavily with the top college players to sign them before they go to college. And that's something that college football and NFL, they don't have a problem with because you got to go until you're 21. And so we can talk marketing all day. I love talking marketing, but
go ahead.
No, you go ahead, man. Well, your topic.
Well, I'm still fired up about, we're talking about marketing, and I won't mention a certain announcer who said a certain thing, but I'll tell what the certain thing is. Is Devin Fontenot is out there, you know, pitching for his team's season, right? For every
– I know exactly where we're going with this.
Oh, really? I'm concerned about his energy levels if he can keep up this performance because he got so fired up after the punch-out. What is he, 2 years old? You know what two-year-olds do? They get really excited, and then they crash, and they go to sleep. That's not happening to Devin Fontenot.
Who's gone like 5 2/3 hitless.
Yeah.
Haven't had a hit since like fourth inning.
Like what? He pumps his fist and gets fired up and yells at the crowd. What does that have to do with
was like advocating for Zach Hess to get in the game because Fontenot, I don't know if he can remain that high energy. It's like, dude, this is probably one of the most energetic guys in the country. He was like a rubber band. They just snap him back and keep going. I heard that exact line, and I'm actually glad you said it because I completely forgot about it. But
it was brutal. It's brutal, man. Like, God, he's excited. Like, it's not like his heart rate's going to be fine when he comes back in 7 minutes, okay? It's just simple, like, laws of human nature. It's about heart rate, okay? It's about heart rate. You know, what happened 5 minutes ago, if he's in shape, it's not like he's doing burpees in the dugout. Like, if he's doing burpees in the dugout, I'd be worried. He's not. But and also something that just makes me so mad. Devin Fontenot is an elite college arm. But Drew Mendoza can hit 94-mile-an-hour fastballs at the knees, Paul. Like, why they pitched to him, I've got no clue.
They had first base open. Drew Mendoza, preseason All-American, didn't have an All-American year this year, but
third-round draft pick,
like, absolutely hot at the plate right now. Just don't pitch to him. Like, set up a force somewhere, face a righty. Actually, I don't even know if there was a righty on deck. I can't.
Dude, it's just the principle. Like, if I saw they were going to pitch to him, and I said, if they're going to pitch to him, he should not see a fastball the whole bat. Or at least you should go, like, fastball up and in, something really hard to get a bat head to, and then curveball him to death and walk him. Because his run doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So that was just unfortunate. I felt bad for Devin Fontenot because he was so shaken up after the loss, and you could tell he was clearly willing to do whatever his coach just thought was right to win. Like he bought in, it just didn't work. It was a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was the right idea to keep him out there. I like how Palmieri was like, he's been our best relief arm all year. Him, Peterson, and Hess. Used Peterson a lot yesterday. Hess got rocked around yesterday. Fontenot is our guy today. We're riding and dying with him. They haven't touched him all day. Like, let's ride him out.
No, I definitely was glad he was still in there.
And I thought that LSU was going to win that game after the high energy situation, I think in the ninth or the tenth inning, where they got out of a big jam. But You know, I'm sorry, LSU fans. You guys had a good season, way better than what we thought you guys were going to have.
Injury-riddled, definitely not going anywhere.
Right. You guys will be back next year. But, man, can we talk about Mike Martin putting on one of the – I called it on Twitter a top 10 television moment in history. After the game was over, I hope you guys left your TV on for 5 extra minutes while Florida State was celebrating. Mike Martin was talking to coach. He talked Pulmonary's ear off at home plate after the game, probably a minute solid on the handshake. He gets back. He's like waving to his wife in the stands. She waves goodbye to him, blows him a kiss, and he takes one step in the dugout and just like double fist pumps and like shakes uncontrollably. It looked like a
Gary Gilmore style from 2 weeks ago.
It looked like a swarm of bees were around him. Like, that is the celebration that I can compare it to. Like, put a swarm of bees around you and just move every body part in totally different directions and picture yourself being 75, 80 years old doing it. It was a top 10 television moment. And, like, I'm so happy for Mike Martin because we've kind of, like, not trashed him all year, but kind of made fun of him.
We trashed the pro. We don't feel bad for programs like Florida State. That's all right. It is.
They went through a really bad stretch where it was just really fun to make fun of them. They were on a roller coaster all season. But you know, they're hot at the right time. They haven't lost this postseason yet. They just beat LSU on the road twice. Going back to last week, they beat Georgia twice by like 10 runs. They also beat Florida Atlantic. And then they beat NC State in the last game of the ACC tournament. They didn't move out of the pool, but I think I think that was the game that kind of pushed them into the NCAA tournament. So they've won like 7 straight postseason games. They are wearing really cool gold uniforms, and they are playing for something that everybody's aware of. You know, it's Mike Martin's last season. That's 41 straight years of 40 wins or more.
I think this was year number 40.
Whatever, 40 years of 40 wins or more is a stat that I don't think will ever be broken, ever. Like, I agree. I don't see a team winning that many games that many years in a row because the amount of guys that you have to develop in that program, recruit, it's just never going to happen again. And this isn't going to be a Florida State only podcast. We've talked about them a lot today, but they did just punch their ticket less than an hour ago. They're going to be a fun team to watch. It wouldn't surprise me if they win the whole thing, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they go 0-2 in the College World Series and get blown out. Because we've seen both. We've seen both Florida States this year. Like, the worst team on the planet, best team in the country. Well, I'm really interested. But, dude, James, we got to talk about last little Florida State segment. We weren't aware of this until today. But Florida State doesn't have just one. They have two club players from that national championship team last year.
Unreal.
Florida State won the national championship in club baseball last year with Tim Becker and Nico, I forget his name, Nico something. Let me look it up real fast. Nico Baldor, who pinch hit today. And he transferred from Miami, had to sit out last year, and played club baseball for Florida State. And now they're both sitting on a roster right now with Drew Mendoza, Drew Parrish, Van Eyck, like some major league talent. And they're getting playing time. And so we got to raise the question. Is Florida State the only team in the country with a minor league system? Like, are they going around the rules? Like, this is like the New York Yankees calling up people from like the Staten Island Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever they are now.
This is so wild.
Like, it amazes me that Florida State is working their way around the NCAA and saying, we have so many talented players that we're actually going to build a pipeline, a minor league system in our club baseball. We're going to win those championships. We're going to win ACC championships. And, like, we're just going to move players back and forth, up and down. We'll get transfers from different schools, put them in the minors for a year, and then have them ready.
Like, dude, that's Mike Martin's onto something, man.
Mike Martin is ahead of the curve, man. This is something that I could see in 10 years from now being like something every team does. You're not good enough to be on our varsity team. Let's put you on our JV, which is just club baseball. And then you got club baseball World Series, you got College World Series, and so forth. But, man, I was cracking up on my couch so much because in my head I was just thinking, like, that old fart is up to something way ahead of everybody else. Like, he's a curve. Like, this is the technology era, and somehow this hasn't leaked as a story that Mike Martin is just building a double-A farm team in the, literally his own backyard. Like, he probably lets the club team use the field. He probably coaches them up. Like, hey, club team's got the field from 2:50 to 5 o'clock, and then the real team, you guys show up at 5 for BP, and we'll take some ground balls after. Like, that's exactly what's going on. And, that old man, it must be smarter than 99.9% of the world, because whatever he does, it seems to work.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm kind of rooting for him now. I think I'd rather see him win the whole thing, and then, you know, we can go back to putting Florida State in that group of, like, really awesome programs that, you know, it's fun to root against. But I'm rooting for him. He's 75 years old, never won the College World Series. And he has
the same amount of College World Series as everybody listening to this podcast.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I don't think we have any national champions listening to this podcast. And if and if we do, let us know who you are so we can interview you. It would be good to see Florida State win a national championship.
I'm looking at the bracket right now, and they're going to match up with the winner of Arkansas or Ole Miss game one. So
that's not a good matchup for them.
Are any of these games good matchups for anybody? Because you've got Texas Tech. Is it going to play either Michigan or UCLA?
That's a good matchup for Texas Tech. They beat both of those teams bad.
I think that is. If we're gonna, let's just do a little mini preview. Say hot takes. Hot take: Texas Tech against UCLA. Texas Tech should be the favorite in that game. Florida State against either Ole Miss or Arkansas. I think Florida State can win either one of those games. I think they're talented enough to beat Arkansas, I think more talented than Ole Miss. You'll have Vanderbilt and Louisville facing off game one. That's going to be an unreal game. That could be a national.
Reed Detmers versus Kumar Rocker.
Yeah, and then if you know the score of the Mississippi State game right now, I'd like to know, because last time I saw they were winning. Mississippi State could clinch, and they're going to play either Auburn or North Carolina. If that's North Carolina, it'd be two big names, two schools really high on the analytics and development end with technology too. So it's going to be a fun round in Omaha, man. It's going to be almost 11 days if it goes to its final conclusion.
And hopefully it does. But previewing the games for tomorrow, we know that there's going to be two. We probably will have another show tomorrow night after the Super Regionals are done. Yeah, maybe Tuesday night, one of those days, because we've been getting a lot of requests. Like, you guys need to put out a podcast every day. It's like, you know, if we could, we would. And we probably could, but we won't.
Well, hold on a second. We can't. We got to make a living somehow.
That's true. But anyways, we got Arkansas and Ole Miss tomorrow. Who knows who's throwing? Because I think it's going to be inning by inning bullpen committee. We might even see Isaiah Campbell come out of the bullpen for Arkansas tomorrow. Like, best case scenario for both teams is that whoever's the visiting team puts up like a four spot and just puts chaos and pressure on the other team. Then you can kind of line up your bullpen from there. Worst case scenario is it's like a 0-0 game in the seventh, and then just everybody's head spinning. Like, that's when bad decisions are made, James, in college baseball. From a coaching standpoint, from a player standpoint, low-scoring games and elimination games late in the game. I know I just said games three times in 3 seconds, but late, it's got to be late in the game. It's got to be a close game and something else. What did I say?
Elimination game.
Because that's when you see teams like trying to bunt a guy over from first to second with one out. Like, you see like hit and runs that are just failed miserably.
You
see players pointing to their helmets to ask for reviews every single play. It just becomes kind of like a very stalling type game. Well, there's a lot of stalling going on, a lot of bullpens, a lot of mound visits. I hope that's not the case, but again, I do want to see some chaos in this tournament. We've seen plenty. I hope this is how what happens. I hope Arkansas comes out to like a 3-0 lead and holds it until like the seventh, and then Ole Miss puts up like a two spot in the seventh inning, and then it's just like the balloon was this big. You can't see my fingers. It's not very big. It's about an inch. And then the balloon instantly, everybody's head grows to 3 feet wide. It's just like, uh-oh, instant, boom. This is panic mode. Everybody thinks it's safe. 3-0 lead, and then boom.
No, not.
3-2.
Oh, yeah.
What you going to do now? And then The other game that we are guaranteed for tomorrow is the Tar Heels and the Tigers. And Auburn looked bad, very bad today. Mucho badness.
Didn't score today.
But the good news is I believe that Love will not be pitching tomorrow. Is that his name? Love?
Yeah. For Auburn's sake, they better hope they don't see him warm up at the bullpen through eight innings today.
No Love tomorrow. And Auburn, just as talented as North Carolina. North Carolina has a home field advantage.
Wrong.
What do you mean wrong?
The first part. Wrong.
Auburn is just as talented as North Carolina, bro.
Wrong.
You're literally lucky that Tanner Burns is not starting a game this year, because a healthy Tanner Burns would have locked that series up today against North Carolina.
Dude, North Carolina gets no Love, man. I just call it like I see it. They're a damn good team. They're underrated. They're underrated, man.
This will be the last segment before we get off.
It has been a great couple of days, man. I just love what we've been able to do, being able to watch all this and report on it and engage with people who love it, because it's untapped, man. It is the best kept secret in all of sports, man. This industry, hands down, best kept secret.
I know we shouldn't be looking forward to next year, but I am. Next year, we will make sure that the NCAA markets this tournament to every single eyeball in the nation, because you don't even have to be a sports fan to enjoy, 18 to 22-year-old kids literally leave their souls on the field to please between 3,000 and 13,000 people in the stands for a regional and a super regional. And amen. You think about it in the relativity of college basketball, college football, those would be considered tiny, tiny, embarrassing crowds. Yeah. But to these baseball players, it means more to them than any football player, any basketball player. And I say that as very subjectively, very biased, but you just don't see the emotions and the constant. Maybe it's because football players wear helmets and basketball players, there's only 12, 13 guys on a team, so the numbers are different. But the emotion that the college baseball players play with, the way that the crowd reacts.
Here, let me just say this. I'll tie all that together and put my own spin on it. What is the difference in the quality of product between, obviously, there's college football and college basketball, and then there's college baseball. Is college baseball 1/10 as good as basketball and football? Or is it 1/10, 1/30, 1/5? Well, let's say it's 1/5. Well, the coverage of it is not 1/5 different. The coverage of it, the exposure, is like 1/50. There's a bigger disparity between how football and basketball is presented and marketed as opposed to how baseball is broadcasted, right? So maybe college football and basketball is a little better product, right? Maybe it's maybe baseball is a fifth better, 1 in 5, but the marketing disparity is way bigger than that. It's like 1 in 100. Right. And the evidence is we're able to just call up the best kids in the country. The combined signing bonuses of the guys and best coaches.
Like, so, you try to get Nick Saban on the phone. I dare you. Get him to agree to a Skype interview. Ron Polk wanted to come on this show. Still listens to it. He still loves it. Yeah. Good luck with that, guys. Maybe the NCAA should just hire us or attempt to hire us to run their marketing, and then we could just tell them no.
They can sharpen our pencils.
Right. They can sharpen our pencils. But anyways, we'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully you guys enjoyed 7 games today. I'm hoping – I know it's not going to happen, but I'm hoping Stanford comes back and wins today, because I want to see 3 games tomorrow, not just 2.
Yes, sir.
Because I think even if Stanford wins today, which they're not, they will not win tomorrow. So take that, Mississippi State fans.
Which also they're not.
Yeah, which they won't win. If they don't win today, they're not winning tomorrow. So you don't have to worry about them coming out of this super regional, Mississippi State fans. I just want to see more baseball. I know you guys do too. I know you guys want to call in sick for work tomorrow and go sit at the dude, old Duty Noble, and watch some more baseball. That's what I'm going to leave you guys on. We'll be back maybe in 24 hours or so. We'll see.